The Oracle Network. Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to the official 50th episode of Mask of Sanity. This is so exciting, and I really appreciate everyone who has been by my side for the last year. As always, I hope that today's episode will be as interesting to you as it is to me. So with that, I'm going to cover the Westport murders, which are sometimes referred to as the Burke and Hare murders, named for the perpetrators William Burke and William Hare. These murders came on the coattails of a need for cadavers at medical schools, and knowing that medical schools would pay handsomely for the corpses, including Dr. Robert Knox and his School of Anatomy, this incentive of paying for a dead body caused a flurry of grave robbing and murder throughout England and Scotland, the most infamous being the murders committed by Burke and Hare. Over a 10-month period, these two men lured at least 16 victims to the lodging homes on Westport Street where they lived, and with the help of their significant others, they would murder their tenants and then bring the bodies to Dr. Knox, who paid them £7.10 for each one. The ease with which they made this money caused them to become very greedy, and they started killing people who were even well-known in the community, including a developmentally disabled children's entertainer who went by the name Daft Jamie. They were eventually caught after a couple staying at Burke's lodging home discovered the dead body of a woman under a bed in the spare room. Burke and Hare were arrested, but Hare was given immunity for testifying against Burke, who was then convicted of murder and hanged on January 28, 1829. What happened to Hare and his wife remains a mystery to this day. Buckle up, my friends. This one is going to be a bumpy ride. This is Mask of Sanity. William Burke and William Hare were both born around 1792, although some sources have Hare's year of birth listed as 1804. But either way, both men were relatively about the same age and both hailed from the same area in Northern Ireland, the province of Ulster. Burke had moved to Edinburgh, Scotland in 1817, several years before Hare, and left his wife and two children behind in Ireland. He worked various jobs, including a laborer, a baker, and even worked as, quote, a navvy for the Union Canal, end quote. And for a time, he worked as a cobbler before he settled into running a lodging house. While working for the Union Canal, he met Helen McDougall, who he began a relationship with. William Hare emigrated to Scotland and, like Burke, also worked as a laborer for the Union Canal. He eventually landed in Edinburgh and became an acquaintance of a man named Logue and his wife Margaret Laird. Logue ran a lodging house, and when he passed away, Hare saw this as an opportunity. He married Margaret and inherited the business. Margaret continued to run the house for a time while Hare continued working at the canal. In 1827, Burke met Hare after Burke and Helen moved into the lodging house, Logue's Lodgings, located in Westport, and this was the one that was run by William Hare and Margaret. In December, one of the tenants, a man who went by Old Donald, died in his sleep, and instead of feeling some compassion for the man who had died, Hare was actually angry at him because Old Donald still owed £4 in rent. So he hatched a plan with Burke to remove Old Donald from his coffin before it was buried, exchange the body with enough tanning bark to equal the necessary weight, and then take the body to a medical school to sell. There was a shortage of cadavers because the only legal supply chain came from executed prisoners or those who had committed suicide. But with a sharp decrease in executions at the time, there was obviously a limited number of cadavers to use for dissection demonstrations. Professor and Dr. Robert Knox was a lecturer at the University of Edinburgh's School of Anatomy who had, quote, a flourishing dissecting establishment in Surgeon Square, end quote, and boasted of performing a full dissection at each lecture. Burke and Hare approached Dr. Knox about selling old Donald's body, and Knox wasted no time and asked no questions about where the body had come from. Instead, he handed over £7.10 to the men, and with that, a light bulb went on over the heads of Burke and Hare. They could kill people and sell them to Knox, making easy money, and as long as they did it carefully, there was no one to stop them. In January 1828, another tenant of Hare's, a man named Joseph the Miller, fell ill, and initially Burke and Hare decided to give it some time and see if Joseph died from his illness, but they soon grew very impatient. One night, the two men offered Joseph a drink, refilling his glass with whiskey until Joseph could barely stand. They then began, quote, suffocating him by covering his mouth and nose while he was forcibly restrained, end quote. They chose suffocation as their method of murder because it didn't leave any marks on the body and therefore wouldn't raise any suspicion to Knox or the medical students who would be watching the dissection. After Joseph's death, Burke and Hare knew that waiting around for ill tenants wouldn't bring in the money as fast as they would like, so Hare began to, quote, prowl the streets, seeking vulnerable people, the old, the infirm, the heavy drinking, and invite them back to a room at Logg's Lodging House where Burke was waiting. They then usually proceeded to get their guests drunk, after which Burke would immobilize them while Hare suffocated them, end quote. Like many serial killers to come after them, Burke and Hare recognized that certain communities would be less likely to be noticed as missing, so they chose to prey on the poor, luring them into the lodging house with promises of a drink and somewhere warm. Their next victim was Abigail Simpson, who decided to stay at the house for one night in February. The men served her alcohol until she was so drunk that she passed out, and then they suffocated her. They then sold her body to Dr. Knox for £10. Now, Dr. Knox was supposedly an intelligent man. He was a doctor, he was a well-respected professional, and it seems like he probably knew what was going on, or at least suspected that Burke and Hare's method of procurement wasn't legal, but because it benefited him, he chose to turn a blind eye to what Burke and Hare were doing as long as they continued to come through and provide him with fresh corpses. From here, the pace began to pick up, and both Helen and Margaret got involved as well. Margaret invited a woman into the house, gave her multiple drinks, and then Hare came in and killed her. Not long after this murder, Burke, quote, encountered two women in the section of Edinburgh known as Canongate, Mary Patterson and Janet Brown. He invited them to breakfast, but Brown left when an argument broke out between McDougal and Burke. When she returned, she was told that Patterson had left with Burke. In fact, she, too, had been taken to Dr. Knox's dissecting rooms, end quote. What Janet didn't realize when she left the house was that she absolutely would have been killed, too, and had no idea that her friend was now dead and on her way to being used as a dissection cadaver. This would be the murder that began to raise some suspicion towards not only Burke and Hare, but Dr. Knox as well. As it turns out, several of Knox's students recognized Mary Patterson during the dissection lecture. Despite any questioning, Burke and Hare saw nothing but dollar signs and became increasingly greedy. The more bodies they had, the more money they made, and no one was off limits to these two. All right, friends, hang on just a minute while I take a short break. I'll be right back. And welcome back to the show. Their next victim was a woman named Effie. Effie was often seen on the streets begging for money, and Burke and Hare saw her as someone who wouldn't be missed, so they lured her to the lodging house, murdered her, and then sold her body for £10. There's even a story of Burke, quote, saving a woman from police by claiming that he knew her. He delivered her body to the medical school just hours later, end quote. They killed an elderly woman with an overdose of pain medication, and then murdered her blind grandson in the most brutal way imaginable. Hare grabbed, quote, the young boy and stretched him over his knee and then proceeded to break his back. Both bodies were ultimately sold for £8 each, end quote. And then they began to look at people they knew. Their next two victims were Mrs. Osler, who knew Burke, and Anne Dougal, who was related to Burke's common-law wife, Helen. They also targeted Elizabeth Haldane, who had previously stayed at the lodging house but couldn't afford a room there now. She had fallen on hard times and had asked Hare, in an act of mercy, to allow her to sleep in his stables. Hare agreed, but he had no intention of ever letting her leave. Sticking to their same MO of getting their victims drunk and suffocating them, Burke and Hare murdered Elizabeth. And just a few months later, they did the same thing to Elizabeth's daughter, Peggy, because Peggy had gone to the lodging house to ask them if they knew anything about her mother's disappearance. And then Burke and Hare made a mistake. They decided that James Wilson, who was a physically and developmentally disabled man who worked as a children's entertainer under the stage name Daff Jamie, would be their next victim. They killed him in the same way they'd done most of the others, but when they brought him to Dr. Knox, who then used James's body during his next lecture, almost every student hesitated and began asking Knox if that was actually Daff Jamie. Instead of acknowledging their questions, Dr. Knox immediately began dissecting James's body by, quote, swiftly removing his head and deformed foot, end quote. Rumors began swirling that something was wrong. How was there such a steady flow of cadavers available to Dr. Knox? Pressure was mounting, and Burke and Hare began to argue. One such argument revolved around, quote, Burke's suspicion that Hare and Margaret were cutting himself and Helen out of deals with Knox, end quote. So in response, Burke and Helen started taking in their own lodgers for profit at their own home just up the street. In late October 1828, Burke and Hare invited Marjorie Campbell Dougherty to stay at their home while Hare and Margaret rented out a room to James and Anne Gray, who had actually been at Burke's but were moved to Hare's so that Burke and Helen could murder Marjorie. Later that day, neighbors allegedly recalled hearing a struggle next door, but they didn't think much of it. After Burke and Helen killed Marjorie, they hid her body under the bed in the spare room while the Grays were moved back to Burke's home for the remainder of their stay. It's almost like Burke and Hare kind of had a system between the two homes at this point, even though they were quarreling with each other. They would move tenants from one house to the other while a murder happened so as not to raise any suspicion. But the Grays were curious when they were told that Marjorie was, quote, asked to leave because she had been flirtatious with Burke, end quote. And they were told not to go into the spare bedroom, despite allegedly having some of their belongings in that room from before when they were moved to Hare's lodging house temporarily. And of course, when you're told not to go into a room for whatever reason, all it does is make you want to go in there. So they did. They waited until the coast was clear, and they went inside, where, sure enough, they found Marjorie's deceased body underneath the bed. Instead of going directly to the police, the Grays confronted Helen, who promptly offered them a bribe of £10 each week if they kept what they'd found to themselves. But thankfully, the Grays had more than a shred of morality and decided that there was no way they'd keep quiet and went to the police to report what they'd found. However, by the time the police arrived, the body was nowhere to be found because Burke and Hare rushed to get Marjorie's body over to Knox. But this still didn't work out in their favor. There were enough rumors flying around, and now, with this report of a dead body in the home, all four were arrested. Burke and Helen first, and then Hare and Margaret. When police questioned them individually, the jig was up. Each of their stories failed to line up with the others and were so confusing that the only thing police could conclude was that they were all lying. Burke blamed Hare. Hare said he and Margaret had nothing to do with it and it was all Burke's fault. And eventually, they all turned a finger towards Dr. Knox. And perhaps Knox hadn't been made aware of their arrest because he still had Marjorie's body in his dissecting room, so police, along with James Gray, went to the lecture hall where Gray was able to identify Marjorie's body. Police and the surrounding community were baffled. This had been going on right under everyone's noses, and they didn't have the slightest clue. As more and more publicity about the murders reached the town, Janet Brown saw a newspaper article about Burke and Hare and went to the police, suspecting that her friend Mary Patterson may have been a victim of the duo. Not too surprisingly, Janet, quote, later identified clothes found at Hare's lodging house as belonging to her missing friend, Mary Patterson, end quote. And despite what everyone seemed to know deep down, police didn't have enough concrete evidence to prove what had happened, so Lord Advocate Sir William Ray offered Hare a deal. Turn King's evidence against Burke and Helen and be given immunity in exchange for his cooperation. And of course, Hare and Margaret jumped at the opportunity, which gave authorities enough confidence to try William Burke in one of the most publicized trials of the time. The trial began on December 28th, and in less than 24 hours, Burke was found guilty and sentenced to death by hanging. And this is after his once partner, William Hare, testified against him. Burke's execution took place on January 28th, 1829, and there are sources that indicate as many as 25,000 people gathered to watch Burke as he walked to the gallows and was hanged. Even the people who lived near the gallows saw this as a financial opportunity. They offered to let people watch from their windows that looked out over the scaffold if they paid a fee. After his execution, Burke's body was taken to the Edinburgh Medical College, where people actually paid to see his body prior to his dissection on February 1, 1829. Separate groups were taken into the room at a time. One source reports the number of people coming through, quote, at a rate of 60 per minute, end quote, as Alexander Munro, the professor conducting the dissection, went through the process for 2 hours. And as if this wasn't grotesque enough, at one point, Munro dipped a quill into Burke's blood and wrote the following on a sheet of paper. Quote, "This is written with the blood of William Burke, who was hanged at Edinburgh. This blood was taken from his head," end quote. After the dissection, different parts of Burke's body were taken and made into objects such as a book covering and a death mask. Yes, that's right, they actually took some of his skin, tanned it, stretched it, and made it the covering of a notebook. Yuck. Burke's, quote, "skeleton, death mask, and items made from his tanned skin are displayed at the college's museum," end quote, and there are actually two locations. The book bound with his skin is at the Royal College of Surgeons, while his death mask and skeleton are at the Edinburgh University Anatomy Museum. So if you happen to be in the area and are interested in a post-COVID morbid field trip, this could definitely be an option for you. After Burke's trial, Helen was released after police couldn't definitively prove whether or not she had participated in the murders. And prior to Burke's death, he was adamant that Dr. Knox was unaware of how each of the cadavers had been obtained. So Dr. Knox, quote, was not prosecuted, despite public outrage at his role in providing an incentive for the 16 murders, end quote. But his career still plummeted. He was, quote, pressured to resign from his role as curator of the College of Surgeons Museum and eventually left the country altogether, moving to London to live out the rest of his days quietly, end quote. After Burke's execution and dissection, many in the area were furious, not only because Knox wasn't held accountable, but also because Hare and his wife Margaret escaped the noose. He was released from police custody on February 5th, but instead of allowing him to just walk out the front door, they put him in a disguise and escorted him to Dumfries. But while traveling in a coach, Hare was recognized, and word travels fast, even in those days. So by the time Hare arrived, a mob was churning, waiting to get their hands on him. But police didn't want an incident, so they actually skirted him past the town in the middle of the night, and Hare, quote, was eventually set down on the Annan Road and told to walk to England. From there, he disappeared without a trace, end quote. His last known sighting was in the town of Carlisle. Helen and Margaret didn't fare any easier after the trial. They were harassed and surrounded by mobs anytime they went out in public. People were absolutely infuriated that three of the four people who directly contributed to these deaths got off, quote-unquote, scot-free. Helen allegedly ran away to Australia, dying in 1868, while Margaret left Glasgow after being attacked and spent the rest of her life hiding in Ireland. Unfortunately, with the infamy of the Westport murders, slang words and even a rhyme were born out of tragedy. The practice of plying a victim with alcohol and then suffocating them, or, quote, to smother a victim or to commit an anatomy murder, end quote, became known as burking. The rhyme, often sung while jumping rope, went like this. Up the close and doon the stair, butt and ben wid Burke and Hare. Burke's the butcher, Hare's the thief, Knock's the boy that buys the beef. Which is so gross because they're referring to the dead bodies as beef. And this case, it's horrific in its own, but there's just so much weirdness coming out of it too. There's even a story about 17 dolls thought to be for the 16 victims and Burke that were discovered a few years after the murders and death of William Burke. The dolls were found in a tiny coffin in a city park, and, quote, at first, theories on the dolls' significance ranged from witchcraft to child's toys, but eventually, it began to seem that the 17 tiny figures could be effigies for the 17 murder victims a decade earlier, end quote. It's speculated that they're funeral effigies and measured approximately 4 inches in length. Until 1901, they belonged to a private collector, but then 8 of them were given to the National Museum of Scotland. Despite not having a definite answer for why or how these dolls came to be, quote, it is generally agreed that the mysterious little dolls are associated with the crimes of Burke and Hare. No one is certain who among the killers created them. DNA studies conducted in 2005 using DNA extracted from Burke's skeleton attempted to prove that they had been created to assuage the guilty conscience of William Burke, but the test proved inconclusive, so the truth of their creation may never be known, end quote. Because of the Westport murders, as well as several other cases of murder and grave robbing, it forced governing authorities to pass the Anatomy Act of 1832, which sought to get rid of incentivizing murder for cadaver supply by finding ways to increase the different ways that cadavers were legally obtained, including allowing people to donate their bodies to medical science if they chose. A newspaper called The Lancet said the following about the Anatomy Act of 1832, quote, Burke and Hare, it is said, are the real authors of the measure, and that which would never have been sanctioned by the deliberate wisdom of Parliament is about to be extorted from its fears. It would have been well if this fear had been manifested and acted upon before 16 human beings had fallen victims to the supineness of the government and the legislature. It required no extraordinary sagacity to foresee that the worst consequences must inevitably result from the system of traffic between resurrectionists and anatomists, which the executive government has so long suffered to exist. Government is already in a great degree responsible for the crime, which it has fostered by its negligence, and even encouraged by a system of forbearance, end quote. Despite this law, as well as a decrease in popularity of dissecting human beings in the way that Knox made known, there are still plenty of folktales out there about Burkers who wander along isolated roads to kidnap children and sell their bodies. Okay, my friends, those were the Westport murders committed by William Burke and William Hare. As always, if you have a particular case you're interested in, please reach out to Mask of Sanity on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or you can shoot me an email at maskofsanitythepodcast@gmail.com. I'd also like to take a moment and say a huge thank you to my two newest Patreon supporters, Melissa Lee and Michelle Pierce. Thank you so much for signing up and for supporting my show. It truly means the world to me, and I so appreciate everything that you're doing by helping me to give this show a bigger platform and support victim services. And as always, thank you to all of my active Patreon supporters, anyone who has purchased something from my merch store or done a one-time donation through my Ko-fi account. It really means so much to me, and I can say thank you, but I don't feel like it truly encapsulates what I actually feel. So please know how much I appreciate your support. And please stick around after the show for the promo trailer for I Had to Say It podcast. Aaron talks about pretty much whatever he wants, so if you're looking for a show that is a melting pot of topics and talks about things that maybe everyone else is too scared to talk about, this is the show for you. So go subscribe wherever you listen and make sure to leave a 5-star rating and review for Aaron. Thank you all so much for listening, and please join me next week when I take you through part 1 of the Zodiac murders. It was only a matter of time before I tackled this one. Until next time, stay safe, friends. Mask of Sanity is partnered with the Oracle Network.
So 2021 is upon us, and instead of flying cars and monkey robot butlers, we have a pandemic. We have media making every little annoying twit of a child think they're going to be the next famous celebrity because they did some stupid trend they've seen somebody else doing 9 million times. We have people that are self-entitled and stupid and given a voice through social media constantly whining about how everybody else is the problem and how everyone else needs fixings. We have celebrities lecturing us about how we have to give more so we can elevate everyone to a better life from the security of their 7-bedroom multi-million dollar estates. We have politicians lying to us that they're going to fix the situations we're in that they created in the first place. And then we've got me, having the conversations that a lot of us are thinking but nobody's talking about. Because these things have to be said. I had to say it, the podcast. Available wherever you get your podcast fix or at www.ihadtosayitpodcast.com. Why don't you come listen to what I've got to say?